This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
My gosh, Hunter, we have such a jam-packed week this week. We've got amazing guests all week. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be a fun week, and it's going to be busy, and we'll try out a couple of things as we go through this week as well.
We will. It's going to be really kind of heavy local government focus. Today, later on the show, we're going to talk to a former Salem City Councilor for Ward 3, Brad Nanke. On Wednesday, we have our regular chat with the mayor. And then on Thursday's show, we've got Ward 4 City Councilor Deanna Gwynn is going to come in and chat with us as well. So super busy. And of course, tomorrow, Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod. Mm-hmm. Tune in for that if you want to learn all things. But we're going to jump and kickstart the week with our very good friend, founder of the Winter Rod and Speed Show, which is coming up. Rich Bailey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well. It's nice to see you. It means when you're in here, it's like it's that time of year again.
It is that time of year.
Speed show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's time for the Winter Rod and Speed Show.
So give us a tease on what we can expect. It's this coming weekend.
It's this coming Friday night and all day Saturday. And it benefits Fish of Albany, which is the food bank. And on Friday night, we're going to have the Friday night food drive. And everybody that comes in with a can of food gets in for half price.
Cool.
So $5 to get in the show on Friday night only. And we're going to have a rock band called The Crush that'll be playing right on the show floor. We have over 110 cars entered, plus a bunch more on a waiting list. We're completely full. This is probably going to be the biggest show we've ever had.
Wow. Now, is this one down? This is in Albany.
This is in Albany at the Linn County Fair and Expo Center. It's just about 18 minutes down the freeway. Just take that Fair Expo Center exit, and it's right there by the Albany Airport.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so classic cars. I don't like this anymore because now the cars that I grew up with are classic, which makes me feel old. But because, I mean, in my mind, classics are like a Model T.
Right.
No, it's like it's a 74 Chevy Nova.
Well, these are going to be a great combination of cars and custom trucks. We're going to have race cars. Of course, the Capilot Group Dragster will be there. We're going to have the Carly Brogan's 1939 Lincoln Zephyr, which is one of the craziest looking show cars you've ever seen. And that's one of our headliners. Also, we've got the Eagle One 1932 Roadster, plus a whole lot of muscle cars, street rods, classic cars, you name it, we're going to have it.
I was always partial. I love Art Deco, so I kind of like the 30s and 40s, like the Pierce Arrow, the Packards, those. Do you have any of those?
Yes, that would be like Carly's car, that Zephyr. That would be exactly
okay.
That.
That's what
Plus,
I thought.
Plus, we got some business coupes and things like that. So
cool.
It's going to be, like I said, a huge 110 cars, huge variety. There's something for everybody. It's a car show for the rest of us, I always like to jokingly say. people love it. We've been doing it for 19 years now, and we've never had a bad show yet.
Well, it definitely sounds like you've got a section for what Denise would deem a classic car, and then you have a section for what her child will deem a classic car.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's got a classic
We don't want too many newer cars, you know. Yeah. Mainly they're older cars. I think there's a lot of Corvettes this year and a lot of Mustangs, which is pretty cool. There's going to be a giant model car contest in the lobby on Saturday. Also on Saturday, there's going to be a huge swap meet in the back building. I mean, it is big. And we're just getting so many entries. We got to say no at some point. But it's going to be a giant show. Like I said, The Crush will be playing on Friday night, and we'll be giving away free passes to Woodburn Drag Strip and Willamette Speedway, and a pair of those tickets are like a $50 value, and we'll be giving those away at random throughout the show. And so it's looking to be like a great show. We also have a lot of friendly vendors along the perimeter that people can do a little bit of shopping while they're there. Sometimes, you know, it gives people that aren't so much into cars chance to get other stuff besides that.
Okay, well, speaking of tickets and free tickets, we have got some tickets. Hunter, you've got a stack.
I've got a stack of complimentary passes, KYKN teaming up with Rich and the Winter Rod and Speed Show. And so they're good anytime during show hours, either 6 to 9 on Friday or Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. All you got to do, if you need some, come on down by the station anytime this week between about 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. And we will happily take care of our listeners with a couple of free passes while they last.
Nice. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but this time of year, it's always kind of ookity and people like to find good things to do inside.
It's going
to
be dry and cold.
Mm-hmm. Dry and cold. Real quick, though, you said model car, and that intrigued me. I was a kid who used to build model cars, and I remember the glue, and you'd have to, like, step away from the table because you'd kind of get a little woozy from the glue. Is that the kind of models you're talking
exactly.
about?
Yeah, exactly. So that's still a hobby that still exists today, and there's a group in Eugene that takes care of that model car contest, and there's usually about 50 to 60 model cars along there for everybody to take a look at. And we do that in the lobby.
Okay. Now, I was one of those people that I really liked them and I would keep them on a shelf. I wasn't like the boys who would take them outside and then blow them up.
Yeah.
Demolition derby.
Yeah, we've all done that with M80s and whatnot. But,
I know.
But anyway, so if anybody that wants to bring a model car to the contest or the model car, they can do that. And it's free entry for that. Just bring model car down on Saturday morning.
Okay, go ahead, Hunter.
Well, I was going to say, does this include like Legos now? Because, you know, Legos are putting out these model cars. Like, I think my kids have got a couple of them.
Yeah, I guess that's some model cars of the new century, right?
That's right.
I'd actually like to see somebody with just a box full of random Legos build something versus a kit that tells you exactly how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm old school again that way.
Well, I've done that before, and it never turns out to look like a classic car. Let's put it that way.
It always looks like your drawings of them when you were six.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to also mention that Joe Morrison is coming to the show. He's a Nitro Funny Car driver and one of the only people in the United States is licensed to both drive a Top Fuel Dragster and a Nitro Funny Car. And he's a good friend of mine, and he's coming all the way from New Jersey.
From Jersey? Oh my gosh.
He'll be signing photos.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. What I love about the car shows, too, is a lot of people that have those cars, they are passionate about them. And they will talk. I know so many of them, first of all, don't try to touch them or sit on them or anything like that. That's a bad thing. But talk to them. Ask them questions. It's always interesting because so much love, care, time, and treasure go into restoring these amazing automobiles.
That's one of the things about our show is we allow the owners to sit by their cars and talk to people as they walk through. And so there's a lot of social interaction at this event.
I know, and I love that, versus just kind of walking by and looking at it. It's like, okay, that's pretty. But to find out, especially because I grew up, my dad restored old cars. We had a 36 Chevy for years that we used to take into parades. And so a lot of it really didn't make it past the Bondo stage, but still the intent was there. But I love that culture. It's just a great culture.
It really is. The car people are very generous and they love their hobby and they're passionate about it. And it's great that it's still around after all these years.
Yeah, I agree. So is there a website, Rich, or a Facebook page or an event or something people can go and get the info in case they're driving?
Sure. They can go to capitaldragster.com.
CapitalDragster.com. I will put that in our show notes for today as well. And I believe if you go to kycan.com on our events calendar, there is a link to it. In fact, I know there is. I put it there.
There's
a link to the show information as well. So if you're driving and you didn't catch that and you want more info, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the basic info at the Linn County Fair and Expo Center in Albany this coming Friday from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Perfect.
There's your basic info.
There you go. Well, Rich,
thank you, Hunter.
Great to see you. Yeah, I know. Good job. Always great to see you. And again, best of luck with this. And once again, we have about 20 tickets. If you want them, pop by the station all this week from 10 to 4. You can meet Hunter. Mm-hmm. Hunter will probably be there.
I'll be there, except for just that 1 hour in the middle of the day. I'm doing something else. I can't
when
really
you're doing
think of it off.
What is it? Yeah, you do something. It's a lot of talking.
Yeah. If you're not lucky enough to get one of those tickets or can't come to the station, it's only $10 to get into the show. And we do have coupons at local Burgerville stores and Bi-Mart. So just stop on by, get some coupons, and come on in. Only $7 for a person. And the great thing is that anymore events cost so much money to get into, and our show is geared for the family. So a family can come to the show and spend only $20, and it's free parking as well.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. I love that you guys do that and keep those ticket prices in the realm of reality, frankly, because so much of them are so crazy. Again, we're talking with Rich Bailey, founder of the Winter Rod and Speed Show, which is coming up this weekend. Thank you, Rich. Always great to see you.
All right. Great to see you.
All right, everybody. We're going to take our first break. We're going to come back and chat with former Ward 3 Salem City Councilor Brad Nanke. Come on back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and by Mart, where you can get some coupons for the Winter Rod and Speed Show.
That's right. That's right. Way to tie it all together.
That's right. That's what we do here. We connect dots.
We connect dots. Yes, we do. All right. Joining us on the phone right now is former Salem City Councilor for Ward 3, Brad Nanke. Councilor, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me to connect some more dots.
Yes. Well, before we jump in with that, I mean, Hunter and I last week talked, and well, of course, we talked with Jeff Reynolds about it, too. Salem City Councilor keeps making national news for all the wrong reasons, and they made national news last week for the appointment of an individual who had a murder conviction. There's a whole, we kind of have gone over that. We don't need to rehash all that.
Right.
But we wanted to have you on to kind of talk about procedure, because, first of all, the boards and commissions, I wanted to dig a little deeper into boards and commissions, and I know that you were on a number of them and have a lot of experience. But before we jump into that, give us a brief history of your time and tenure on the council, Brad.
Sure. I was elected in 2000, started my service in 2001, and went through 2020, so I had 20 years on the Salem City Council, longest-serving Salem City Councilor in history, they tell me. Sat through two apportionments or reapportionments. Essentially what that is after the census, then they redraw the ward boundaries. And I was the only conservative on council for my first 2 years. And as part of that, I lost 80% of my ward in 2001 when they redrew the maps. City Council drew their own maps rather than taking the one that the Council of Governments recommended them. I was the only no vote a lot of times. I served as council president a couple of the years, had five neighborhood associations in my ward originally, and then it moved down to three with reapportionment, sat on five, six, maybe seven of the subcommittees, chaired a lot of them. And I did serve on the Boards and Commissions Appointment Committee, which we can talk about here in a little bit as well.
We will.
And over that time, I may have missed 10 meetings. I could count them all on my hands. And when I wasn't at a meeting, I either appointed had a guest counselor sit in, or sometimes when I was out traveling, I would actually call in so that my vote could be heard to represent. Those in Ward 3 and the rest of the city, really, as well.
Right, right. So that leads me to one of the controversies that happened right at the beginning of the meeting, and a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads on this. The counselor for Ward 8, Mickey Varney, walked out of the meeting. She made a speech and alluded to secret things happening and conversations happening. She didn't have any facts or anything, or, you know, receipts, as the kids say, to back it up. She just made a lot of comments and then just decided that she ain't having it. She grabbed her stuff, took her marbles, and she walked out of the meeting. And it was rather awkward. Everyone just sort of sat there while she gathered up her purse. But what I wanted to ask you is, first of all, number one, Ward 8 wasn't represented at that meeting. And then, so what are the ramifications for her? And like you said, you sometimes had to make difficult votes.
Oh, yeah. And I watched that meeting as well, and it's, I'm not going to participate in this discussion, and I'm going to leave. And that, again, behind-the-scenes conversations and worried about serial meeting stuff. As long as there's not a quorum, four counselors or a mayor and three counselors can meet every day and talk about things, and that actually happened frequently as I was on council, especially in those first 2 years. So as long as you don't have a quorum, it's not a serial meeting. If you can have four people meet, if they never talk to a fifth person, they can do that all the time, and it happens all the time. There was four members of council, the mayor and three city councilors on the boards and commission appointments committee. So that there are behind the scenes conversations all the time. And when I, in my first couple of years, it was like, where the heck did that come from? And you know, these people were meeting, mm-hmm. and as long as they knew they had, you know, another vote beyond that, whatever they were talking about, they could get it through council.
So, I know during your tenure, there were a number of meetings, sort of like the one a couple of weeks ago, where two meetings were taken up with, you know, resolutions to reaffirm things that have already been there. And so those are, you know, really definitely very difficult meetings to attend, especially if you're
a ton of time that the council could have been working on things that they actually have control over. Mm-hmm. And that used to drive me crazy. But with Councillor Varney's statement mm-hmm. at the front end, essentially Ward 8 voters had no voice in that meeting at all. She could have done a lot of things, but instead she is really akin to AWOL.
Oh, yeah. And
in my opinion, she abandoned her post. And if she's going to take her marbles and go home, as you said, on an appointment decision, what else might she be willing to, you know, abandon her ward and the rest of the city with her vote on?
So well, it just,
she could have had a guest counselor come in. It was a special meeting on a Wednesday, so she could have just said, oh, I have a conflict I can't get out of, and so I'll be absent. There were a lot of things she could have done.
Well, a way of making her statement that she's upset that anyone would dare question her decision in the first place. And like you said, she had to stop everything. The whole meeting stopped while she packed her purse. Well, she packed Ward 8 and all the people she represents into that purse and just carried it out with her.
Yeah, and as a counselor, you're not just representing your ward. Really, you're representing the entire city. I had numerous people call me because they weren't politically aligned with their counselor, because they knew they had someone who could actually bring something onto the council floor because their own counselor wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Did that happen a lot?
You don't just represent your ward. You represent the entire city with every one of your votes.
And the council has always gone through cycles. I know you said when you first started, you were the only conservative, and then there was a pendulum swift change swing. And then, of course, you know, we had the convention center built. There were all kinds of really cool things that happened, and then it just shifted back. So I'm wondering.
Oh, yeah. I ran on the convention center. Mm-hmm. I used to represent downtown. That was my original ward, and Southeast Salem all the way out to Illy. And with the reapportionment, I lost all of that, and because one of the counselors wanted to move and so needed to make sure that new property was in her ward, and the other one wanted to have the hospital in Willamette University. And so I got stuffed out into the middle of nowhere because, you know, my votes weren't necessarily in line with the balance of the council.
Yeah, which is not really a super fun place to be. Do you get a sense, I mean, watching kind of what's going on, that there might be a shift back? We've got an election coming up this year.
Yeah, and if I were running against Councillor Varney in Ward 8, I just got a present dropped in my lap, and I would run with that. It's like, because she abandoned. When you're the sole no vote on several years worth of decisions, that's the opportunity when you can shine the light on the decision itself. And, you know, there's talk about the consequences of the decision, the politics that are involved in it, that it's an opening to let the rest of the city know. And she just made a brief statement at the upfront and then again took her marbles and went home.
Well, I think
totally irresponsible, and like, wow.
Yeah, anybody that's running right now to either replace these people or potentially running against the people that voted
to give Salem City Council a giant black eye and say, we're going to appoint this guy to the Police Oversight Commission, you know, I think that's got to be one of those big talking points during the next few months as we come into election season.
Oh, yeah. It's really amazing on just how the whole thing happened to begin with, which I know we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes.
We will. Yeah. Go ahead, Hunter.
Oh, no, we've got a little over a minute right now, so we don't want to get too heavy into you know, how the appointment became in the first place. But, yeah, just the behavior and kind of the, you know, we're going to vote for this guy whether you like it or not, make our excuses, put our finger in the air and say, oh, wait, the winds have shifted. Let's call a special meeting and go back. And I'm just kind of going, and from what Denise told me watching it, it sounded like it was a miserable thing to watch, let alone if you had to be there.
Oh, yeah, it was truly...
Hang on a second, Brad, because we're going to run out of time. So what I want to ask you when we come back, because we're almost at the bottom of the hour break, because there's always that, when you're voted in, are you representing you or are you representing your constituents? And there's always been a bit of friction with that. So, again, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour. So I want to ask, because a lot of people wonder that. It's like, well, did you vote them in to trust them to represent you based on their own feelings, or are they representing the community? How does that work? And again, you having been in there for a long time, I'm expecting you have some opinions on that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you tell them who you are, and if they agree with that, they want you to represent them, and you may not always align.
Yeah.
And then they can vote you
out. All right. Okay, hold that thought. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour news. Again, we're talking with old former Ward 3 City Councilor Brad Nanke. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday. Gosh, Monday again. We are talking today with former Ward 3 Salem City Councilor Brad Nanke. So, Brad, before the break, we were talking about, you know, kind of that I voted when you're running for office, you're voting for somebody whose judgment you trust to represent you. But then the other side of that coin is you need to be communicating with them because they need your input. And is it do you see that as that's a relationship?
Oh, it is. And it's a relationship with the entire city because, you know, I would have people contact me frequently who didn't feel adequately represented by, you know, their counselor because they were politically on opposite sides. And so I would then contact that counselor and say, hey, you know, you got a person that's this, and if they don't do anything about it, I would bring it to the floor. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, your votes, depending on where the plurality is and what passes and what doesn't, you reflect the entire city of Salem, which is why they're making really bad national news a lot of times.
So let's pivot,
you know, people
over
talk to you, and sometimes they don't. And so you still have to take into consideration the rest of those who you represent, because you don't just represent voters. You represent your ward, and you really represent the entire city.
Right, right. So one of the things that keeps coming up on this was obviously the boards and commissions. You had a number of councilors. There's been votes changed. They had a special meeting last week, which is the one I watched, which I do have to say, there was a lot of good testimony in that, Hunter. There was really a lot of people who really stood up, so it wasn't as painful as the last couple. Still needed a glass of wine, but anyway. So the boards and commissions and committees. So a lot of people are like, well, how did this happen? How did the councilors not know? They're supposed to know this. Walk us through boards and commissions and committees, and how does somebody get on it? Give us the skinny on this.
Sure. Typically, I think it was either the end of the year or the beginning of the year. I'm not quite sure. The mayor would send out a list of all the council committees and say, hey, tell me which ones are your first priority, and if you can't get on that, what are your secondary priorities? And then the mayor appoints the councilors to those committees, and you know, I had several. Some counselors had none because their schedule couldn't accommodate a midday meeting based on, you know, where they worked and anything else. But the mayor actually makes those appointments. And in the case of the boards and commissions appointment committee, I think originally we had the mayor and three counselors. In my case, I think it was myself, Counselor Chris Hoy, and Counselor Anderson. They might have dropped that down to three, just because if you had a couple people who were absent at a council meeting, you could have a plurality of the people on that committee who already had discussed it, making the vote in majority as well. So it may be down to three now. We had a staff person from the city manager's office, and we had a notebook. And for every committee, it would say these are the criteria that you have to meet for being appointed to this committee. So in the case of the Community Place Review Board, that cheat sheet on the front should have said, need a background check. And for some of the other committees, let me back up for a second. So Councillor Gwynn at that meeting last week had said she tried to get a recording of the meeting. That meeting was never recorded. It was an action minutes. So this is who they recommended. This was the vote. And that's so you could speak honestly at that meeting, because boards and commissions already have members. And if you have someone who doesn't play well with others, you want to have frank discussions to that meeting. And people would come into those meetings as well, the chairs of the committees, the staff person from the city who was assigned to that committee. And you needed to have, you don't want an entire board to resign because you stuck somebody on that committee that, again, can't work well with others. So, police chief was at, I think, all of the meetings where we talked about CPRB. And so the city attorney at that recent special meeting had said that background checks had been a criteria, and somewhere that dropped down. I don't know where it dropped. But I don't know if the current police chief attended that meeting. It would have been in 2024, so Mayor Hoy should have been at that meeting, who has a history in law enforcement and corrections. So if there was something about a lifer in that, there's no way he should or would not have known that that's who they were recommending. And then it always just came onto the council agenda as a consent calendar item. And so either, and a lot of people on council don't read all of their staff reports and their packets. So most of the time it's like, okay, already three or four counselors have looked at this and they're making a recommendation. So unless you really dig deep into that, it just kind of flies by the council.
So,
and the recommendation from the subcommittee actually is what happens.
That's what I was going to ask you, because there were a number of counselor comments, even saying, you know, if I had known, because basically what we're talking about, number one, are volunteers, many of whom who have very busy lives, very busy careers. They've got a lot going on. My thought on this was, whoever is making these recommendations, the council needs to have full confidence that what is being brought before them is everything they need to know.
Yeah, and it would be interesting, and maybe in your conversations with the current Mayor Hoy, you can find out who the heck was on that committee back in 2024 that made that recommendation.
Well, I think we'll have that as a question to ask.
And to me, I'm sitting here kind of going, you know, I understand they don't want to look and they don't want to do the deep dive, and they have these committees to do that deep dive. Well, obviously the committee failed miserably because it was a matter of moments later before the public knew this was an issue. And that's where it kind of gets really frustrating, that the counselors claimed they didn't, but yet the public knew within moments.
But the
not with the initial
December
appointment, though.
8th vote, the committee, the Boards and Commissions Appointment Committee, actually recommended not to reappoint.
Yeah.
And the council actually overrode that recommendation and voted to reappoint this gentleman.
Yeah, that's good to make that clear. And then, so there was a lot of confusion. So that does clear up some of that. And we will be chatting. Like I said, we have Mayor Hoy on Wednesday, and we're going to chat with Ward 4 Councillor Deanna Gwynn as well. So real quick, Brad, before we let you go, again, this is a volunteer position. You served 20 years. We're finding these races are getting expensive, but there are some good candidates coming up. Would you recommend if people, you know, kind of really concerned about their city to step up and run?
Oh, definitely. And that's kind of what the Boards and Commissions Appointment Committee, one of their roles is to make the bench. And so the people on that, it is one of the most sought after committees for a councillor to sit on, because mm-hmm. you are building the bench for your political bent. The Budget Committee and the Planning Commission being the top two on that. But that's how people start getting their chops underneath them, by serving on a board or commission rather than just coming out of nowhere and running for governor or whatever. it's starting to build your political history. And so people definitely need to vote, because whoever the mayor is and what the majority of council is, those are the people that sit on that committee.
Well, and you said, too, if you don't hear from your constituents, how do you know?
Yeah.
You're not mind
readers.
If
there was one thing I could go back and redo, I would have actually had a referendum to try to get the council election to take place during the general election rather than the primary, because nobody votes at the primary.
Yeah, that's one of those things I think we constantly press and wish would happen, because you know, when you're looking at 20-25% on a high end turnout for a May election, you know, I suspect with what's going on right now, come November there's going to be a massive turnout, and it would be so nice to sit there and say, hey, these are on there as well. People are out, and let's not, you know, lose these votes by, you know, a handful of people that because they just didn't turn out in May.
Yep. So people need to understand that the May election is the one where the councilors are really elected. Mm-hmm. So you need to vote in May. It is imperative. Council has more to do with your life than the president does. They can tell you how high your fence is, whether you can have a chicken. Council is a very important local government, and they are the closest to the people, and they're the ones who represent you. Sometimes they think nationally as well, so they can write a letter to the president from the city of Salem. But it truly boggles my mind, and that's why they have some of those meetings that go ad nauseum for, you know, several meetings on things that they have no control over.
Yeah.
So we need to, one, get the council back to taking care of their people and the things that matter locally.
Well, on that note, thank you for your 20 years of service. The city of Salem appreciates it. That's a long haul, and I appreciate your perspective on this as well, especially with the boards and commissions, because there's been some muddy on that. So thanks for taking the time, Brad. We appreciate you, and we're going to go ahead and take a break. So take care, Brad.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. We're going to take that last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, so broadening out a little bit, this is hitting. This is huge news for the state of Oregon. Tom Fitton, who is with Judicial Watch, after a Judicial Watch lawsuit, Oregon Secretary of State announces he will now clean 800,000 names from the voter rolls. Think he's going to do it?
Very slowly. Because if they're going to do it, and we'll see if that actually occurs, if they
drag it out and make sure we can get through this November election with 800,000 dirty names on there. That favors one party over another, and I'm trying to figure out which party that would be. I think we can all guess here in Oregon.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and then, of course, if we have a change in leadership at, you know, in the national level in the House and the Senate, then the pressure might be not there to necessarily clear off the ones they couldn't quite get to before November.
Well, when you think about that number, 800,000, Oregon has a population of what? 4 million?
Around 4 million, a little heavy.
So what's the math on that, math guy?
That is between 20 and 25% of our population.
That's huge.
Yeah.
You think that would sway the outcome of some elections in Oregon if that all was cleaned up?
Well, I would look at some of these recent ones where the difference comes down to a handful of votes that show up a week after Election Day.
Yeah.
That have all of a sudden flipped when they needed it to at the right moment.
That famous curve from 2020. It's like in there's trending and then boom to the moon.
Well, I'm thinking more like the recent vote here in the state of Oregon that sent Woodburn from red to blue and gave them a super majority that they were able to pass things like these tax referendums with.
That's right. That's right. This thread is actually a really good one. Tom Fitton's thread on X. Conservative in Oregon said only less than 70,000 vote difference between this is in 2022 for the gubernatorial race. Kotek won with 917,000 and change. Christine Drazen had 850,000. Mm-hmm. So 800,000 would, that would make a difference. Well, basically, Oregon's elections are kind of a joke. But
well, and
vote anyway.
We've been seeing it for a long time. Yeah, vote anyway. The most recent part of this thread where he says that 29 of Oregon's 36 counties removed few to no registrations as required by federal election law. Judicial Watch asserts that Oregon and its 35 of its counties had overall registration rates exceeding 100% of their population.
Huh.
Hmm.
Well, Oregon has 36 counties, so
Yeah. So in 35 of those, you know, we had about 100% of the people registered to vote. What a staggering number. Thank you, DMV and Motor Voter.
Oh, gosh, Well, and then, you know, obviously vote by mail. And I mean, vote by mail. But again, I don't see vote by mail going anywhere in Oregon. It's kind of bipartisan that people kind of like it. And again, with the this is in the Democrats' favor. They rule the roost. There's no impetus for them to do anything about it. So the bottom line is the numbers are there. Like in the May elections that we were talking about with Councillor Nanke, that May election.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention. That's a huge one.
Well, yeah, and I just sit here and I'm going a handful of votes, very slim margins,
yeah,
separate us from being a little more of a conservative state from being a deep blue state, and it just gets so frustrating. It's you know, I always say, you know, when you look at Oregon elections, realize this: we had the 50th ranked governor in Kate Brown out of 50 states. She was the 50 least likely. We had an election, got a new governor who won the majority of the votes in Oregon and still couldn't get out of last place in the governor's. I'm going, how do you enter at the 50 least liked governor when you're elected on that day?
Which is crazy because everybody knew who she was for the year she served in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all had her number. We knew who she was, yet she got elected anyway. And again, if you look at Orstar, that tells the tale, the money that is pouring into this campaign. And then, of course, you see the press conferences this weekend with all of them, you know, crying and weeping and, you know, clutching their pearls and being so upset about two Tren de Aragua gang members in Portland. It's like, they're recovering, but the whole thing is just, the whole country's gone just insane. It's just insane.
Well, and I think this morning the FBI came out with their initial report, which shows that the officer's car was rammed multiple times before they even opened fire. Yeah. So I'm kind of going, a lot of the narrative they tried to set at the end of last week is crumbling, and yet we hear nothing from them.
Of course not, and we won't. That's not the Democrat way. Mm-mm. They'll just change the subject and go on and talk about more crazy crap that they want to foist on the people. So again, yeah, you've got a popularity rating that's in the tank or the toilet, but these people still kept getting. And is it that we can't vote for the R's? I mean, the D's suck, but oh my gosh, instead of maybe try something new, maybe scratch beneath the surface and do a little digging. Maybe these policies would be better for you than the crap we've been living under for 40 years.
Yeah, you would think so, but it all goes into, you know, it's one giant melting pot where I sit here and go, you know, we know that mail-in balloting is ripe for some shenanigans, mm-hmm. Showing that we have about 800,000 people on our voter rolls that shouldn't be there. We know Motor Voter has registered a number of people that don't have the right to vote, mm-hmm. Even if they tell us that, oh, don't worry, they're not actually voting.
Trust us.
Yeah, and I just sit here and go, all of these things, you put them all into a pot and it smells really, really fishy.
It does. Mm-hmm. It really does. Yes, I know. And it's very frustrating. And of course, this weekend and the fresh hell that you wake up to. And, you know, talking about, oh, is the pendulum swinging? People are starting to wake up. Honestly, I don't know. And again, talking about people in sort of popular culture, I did not watch this. I don't even know if it was on network TV, but I guess the Golden Globes were streaming on YouTube last night.
Oh, darn it. I missed it. And I don't
and they
think
had I'm... those Hollywood actors had a lot to say about stuff, Hunter.
Well, don't worry. I'm not going to watch the replay.
Nor am I. Apparently they were wearing little buttons and they were bloviating and they were getting emotional and, you know, rending garments and everything else about stuff they know nothing about, trying to convince an American populace that really no longer gives two craps about what they have to say.
Yeah, and that's all these shows are anymore, is they're just people in Hollywood patting themselves on the back to tell themselves how important they are, while the public, and the fact that it might not have even been on network television, tells you everything you need to know.
I know.
I mean, when network television doesn't want to carry you any longer, you know there's a challenge.
The other side of that is that network television is kind of dying. I mean, network news is kind of dying. The whole media landscape is shifting. But I think it is funny that these people were on there, and again, with their buttons and their, you know, their furrowed brows. And one of the worst, and if this guy's ever in a movie, I just can't watch it. Mark Ruffalo. Dude. Mm.
Well, and that's the thing, is you got one job, do your job and quit
trying. Shut up and act.
Yeah, because that's what you're good for. That's what you're here for. You know, of course, I think we you know, have seen the Jimmy Kimmel takes on, you know, the news of last week and all these mm-hmm. other things. And it's just, I find myself, when I'm looking at social media and I start seeing these things, it's just thumb past, get rid of it. Yeah. These people, that they don't know what they're talking about. They want to push a narrative. Some of my favorites, you know, in regards to the couple of shootings that occurred last week was, did you see this damning evidence? I'm not going to show it to you because, you know, it's just way too horrible. But, you know, there's bad things from the police in this. I'm going, huh?
and again, dig down deeper, escape that sort of media, get out of your own bubble, go on X, because I see things that I don't agree with all mm-hmm. the time on X, but that really is kind of where you're kind of getting the skinny on what's going on. If you know, but a lot of people don't want to know. They really don't want to know. That warm sand is really warm and nice for their head. So,
yeah.
And you're not going to change those people's mind. And at that point, there's no engaging. But as far as Hollywood, yeah, nobody cares, Hollywood.
Nobody cares. And nobody sadly, cares. I mean, I'm watching what went down between, you know, the governor of Minnesota, the governor of Portland, the mayors of Oof. Portland and Minneapolis, the police chiefs of both this. I'm just going, you guys are setting up these violent mm-hmm. narratives.
Yep. Yep.
And then you're going to scream foul when something goes awry. And I have no respect for that.
No, none at all. None at all. All right, everybody, that is it for us today. We've got Amy McLeod on tomorrow and I believe Elizabeth Smith. So tune in for Real Estate Insights tomorrow. Have a great day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.